Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
I'm having podcast practice at the moment, and I want to talk about the thorny topic of this sense of self. Just where is it located? Now, for me, it's sort of... if I had to sort of pinpoint exactly where I think the very centre of myself is, it's sort of the roof of my mouth up a little bit. That's where I think everything comes from. It's sort of like the meeting point where the senses, the taste and vision comes in, hits the brain. And the sound. It's where the outside world collides and sort of hits in the inside. And that's sort of where I feel your sense of self is. Now, I think sort of in terms of coordinate systems, you sort of think your zero coordinates sort of just in between your eyes or something like that, looking forward. And you've got this, something called the frame of reference. And there's... frame of reference is basically a bloody big XY axis, Cartesian, that'll do. That's actually stuck in your head. So X is from your cheeks, Y is out, and Z is up. So you can sort of think of that. And wherever you point, that direction moves. And Einstein said that all frame of references are the same, but he said in order for them to be the same and the speed of light to be the same, you've got these funny coordination things. You just can't... If I'm travelling in a train and I walk forward at 10 kilometres an hour and I walk forward at 1 kilometre an hour within the train, funny thing happens is that someone measuring it from the outside world says, hang on, you're not actually travelling at that speed. You're not travelling at 11 kilometres an hour, you're travelling slightly slower. And it's sort of like this funny thing in space where you just can't add up. The standard way you add up change or stuff like that, you sort of make almost a profit there. So the speeds do not add up linearly, and there's a whole series of symmetries which are sort of universal but not. So that's your translational speed has got an upper limit. It's got this sort of like your speedo has got the maximum speed, the speed of light, and it's sort of because it goes rather than your uniform speed 10, 20, 40, 80. It starts to go narrower and narrower down, the speed of light, and of course, as you go up. Now, there is, in fact, there's nothing to stop you going, oh, bloody hell, I can't go faster than the speed of light. if I had a method, something to push against, fall. So the speed of light is 3 by 10 to the 8 metres per second. Speed of falling, so that your gravitational acceleration is 10 metres per second. So it will take 3 by 10 to the 7 seconds to actually reach the speed of light. So basically, if you add that all together, you could effectively reach and even exceed the speed of light if you were in an Earth's gravitational field for a year, because there's pi by 10 to the 7 seconds in a year. Go check that out. There's a whole series of fascinating facts about pi, and it comes up as one of those facts, that the number of seconds in a year is roughly pi by 10 to the 7, and if you fall at that speed, you would get the speed of light. And indeed, if you got there, you'd have the sensation that you can travel twice the speed of light. And now what actually happens is that it's distance over time. If you travel, if you go up to the speed of light and beyond, you keep on accelerating and beyond that, what actually happens is that your clock slows down, the clocks of what you observe begin to speed up, and the distances become shorter. So you could actually get in your own time to Alpha Centauri within a day, a day's travel. Now, it would still take, you know, people looking at you from the outside for a day's travel. So I could instantly accelerate, imagine accelerating up to the speed of light. It wouldn't take that much, it'd take a year to accelerate up to the speed of light. And what your, and you know, you put so much fuel, so much acceleration, you'll be increasing. What will happen is that the universe will start to shrink and speed up, those two things together. So it will actually, it will actually appear a shorter journey, which is one thing, because the universe will, your length, as mentioned from outside, things will appear to squash forward, but the clocks will also appear to, the clocks outside will appear to, travel at different speeds. The critical thing is that you are not, as you're accelerating, you're not in the Einstein's case of special relativity. To accelerate, you have to go in general relativity. Now, I know I wanted to talk about the sense of self. Now, the there's this critical thing called consciousness, and you really need consciousness to have a sense of time. I know this is going to be hard to accept, but the oldest part of the universe that you see, okay, the oldest part that you see is inside the roof of your mouth. Your feet, which is, say, 4 feet beneath you at the moment, is a 4 nanoseconds in the past. And so your feet are 4 nanoseconds younger than your head. The light coming to you, and then the moon is 1 second younger. You're seeing the moon. If you put a clock on the moon from the Big Bang and click the number of seconds past the Big Bang, and you had a clock yourself which has also had the Big Bang, gravitational effects aside, that clock would show that the moon is a minute younger and the sun is 8 minutes younger, and everything else in the universe is that many times younger until you can actually look up to the birth of the universe. So this idea of time and age is sort of linked with consciousness, and it's a interesting thing to get go. So you've got this sort of universal geometry which allows the universe to be uniform and things, everything to work, and there's no special speed and things like that. We've got to go, and I suppose fundamentally to get yourself around the universe, you really have to have a general relativity. General relativity allows you to do the things of acceleration, and basically acceleration slows down your clock. Okay, so physically slows down your clock. So if you accelerate up to Alpha Centauri and then down to Alpha Centauri, when you arrive in Alpha Centauri, it'll be less than 4 years. Even though it's 4 years, light years away, you can actually travel to such a great speed that your clock slows down to, and so your journey feels, so how far did I do, how long did I take? It takes a year in your time. You traveled, you would reckon at 4 times the speed of light. However, you will have an effect that the place that you travel to does not experience the same gravity and would appear to you to speed up. And this is true. So if I go on a spaceship from here to Alpha Centauri and I travel in my own frame of reference faster than the speed of light, the acceleration deceleration will slow my clock down. my personal clock down, or it will, or alternatively, to me, on the outside world, the actual things orbiting Alpha Centauri will speed up. And so one of the things that you do tell is that if you have the mass of an object and you can see the speed of time change. Now, this is really going to freak you out, that the tapes of if I could have a very big telescope and look to the edge of the universe, I would see I would be able to see phenomena occur which would tell me the gravitational field. I can see vibrational lines and molecules change under the gravitational pressure and all that type of stuff. But I could tell you that the speed of time, as measured by that, that is the actual film of it coming to me, has expanded. It's sort of oozed out as the MP3 file view coming from the edge of the universe has increased. Now, similarly, if I go into the edge of a black hole and I look out, time will slow down completely for me. For each second, I will see hundreds of years of the universe suddenly move out. So I can, you will definitely see time variable. Now, what you're seeing is a lot more, so the universe will speed up, but what's really happening is that there's a lot more light falling into your eye. So you're slowing down and more light is falling. The universe will become incredibly bright and run at very high clock speed as you fall into a black hole. This is all very interesting aspects to me. And I suppose there's that aspect of it. But then there's also the aspect that of rotational frame of reference. So although we've sort of got rid of Newton's absolute frame of reference, we've actually got rid of God, the requirement of God. We've actually said, oh, well, no, we've set this mechanism. There's still room for God, except it's now down in these sort of constants, which are sort of a long distance away. God has sort of no role in actually doing anything. He's sort of got roles in sort of tweaking the dials, I suppose. I suppose we can see. But there is this fantastic settling of this whole universe is rotation-wise. So no matter where I am, I can actually spin around and my arms will fly out. So if I had springs holding my arms together, my arms will spring out such that they'll be able to see my absolute rotation speed. And there is an absolute rotation speed. and it is an absolutely mind-bogglingly fascinating thing. And it's all, and you see this absolute rotation come back into quantum physics and give you these quanta of angular momentum. There's something which doesn't have mass, that's basically and essentially a massless particle like a neutrino will still carry a quanta of angular momentum. Light with no mass still carries angular momentum, and it's exactly what this is. So that's velocity kilograms meters. So it's the, so I've got a kilogram on the end of a meter stick and it's traveling at so many kilometers an hour. That's the angle, that's the unit of angular momentum. And then but that also goes down to units of energy per unit time. So if I have my Planck's constant is the unit of angular momentum. It's the fundamental granularity of the universe. So for all this sort of spiritual sort of like we're all part of one universe on one dimension, that is the translation dimensions, we're all also, and so we're all in this universe together because no one's unique. Everyone gets the same rotational, so you get your own, you can have any velocity you like. You can go, you can be born on any planet, in anywhere, any universe, go through at any time you want, any speed you want. You can be alive anywhere, but everyone shares. So you've got complete democracy. It's like a complete open market of, you can select a velocity that you want, a local gravitational field that you want, all these sorts of things, but everyone gets doled out the same angular momentum. The angular momentum of the universe is fixed and locked, and it's like the total momentum of the universe is locked and fixed and stuff like that. But the angular momentum is this most incredible thing, and it crops up as the basic unit of currency that has to be traded between interactions to keep exactly the same. It's sort of like some for the 1960s, where you go into a bank and at the end of the day they tell us how to count all the money ruthlessly and make sure that everything's told up. And so this is one of the things you can't create more of in the universe. And so this is, I suppose, part of your sense of existence, is a sense of your frame of reference and what Einstein has to say about it. That frame of reference translationally is like, you've got freedom to go as fast as you like, but fast you like, there's no zero, there's no infinite speed, it's all relative. However, rotation is different. If you want to rotate zero, there is a way, a system where you rotate zero, and how that all hangs together. It's one of these things which you look at. So the very much thing of translation is the Higgs boson and the Mexican hat function, the way that it is a non-zero vector field of it. So it can have rotate at any phase in this surface of its tire. So this is not so complicated to think of. It's just that people just will not let go of their three dimensions. They just love their three dimensions. They love reality as they've been told it as a kid. And then if we give them an A to look at alternative reality, they gravitate to the most mechanical interpretation of the aid. They just cannot make that step into quantum mechanics, the quantum mechanical wave functions and stuff like that. And so fundamentally, an object, a rock traveling in space, will not dissipate energy, will have continuous energy forever. It is effectively superconducting. That is, and far as motion is concerned, you do not excite Higgs boson. You interact with them, you do not excite them. And so this is, I suppose, very interesting to do with Higgs boson. I suppose the interesting aspect is what actually generates, what is the effective unit of mass as a unit of charge in the Higgs field. That's essentially what it is. Mass is a unit of charge in the Higgs field. They're very interesting to go through. Again, something to really contemplate, that you can drift in space forever, superconducting, but you can, if you want to turn around, you have to have a flywheel which flies for a certain amount and then clamps down for you to actually swing around. It's very much a basic thing to get. Now, what I wanted to talk about, so that's the physics of it, and that really, what is it? You do the physics, and I sort of meditate on the equations and just let it sink in. And you meet people and you say, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm meditating about the big things in life. Well, have you thought of any equations? I'm going to work it out from just staring at a bush or a cloud. Well, or having the vibe of God and all that type of stuff. You can imagine how intensely lonely that is, that person goes off And then they might sit in a Buddhist macro pile, scratch their bum, fart, laugh a bit, go off, have some lunch, then sit down again. And what exactly are they doing in life? You know, why don't they do a degree in quantum physics? It just really, really baffles me. But it is an intensely spiritual thing to think about. And that sort of essence of where you are takes me back to my first, very first thoughts, my first experiences. And that's something I do want to talk about. How can you mix the two together? Well, it's hard to say. For me, it's been a journey of... I suppose it's been an isolated journey. At the end of the day, I think people think, you know, you're overrated and dump you. And I've sort of done the same thing. I think people are overrated. And when they dump me, I sort of feel it's mutual. You know, you go off and just watch meaningless TV forever. And then come back and then whinge a bit and then go out of the room and complain and stuff like that. you can go and do it, but the actual sense of your coordinate system, your sense of existence, does have a root. So like there is sort of this space which you are always in the coordinate axis, and for me it's interesting that space has a lot of concepts linked in with being alive. A sense of time, a sense of flowing. You have a sense of your time in the universe. You have this clock inside your head, and each second is experienced. You can't have an experience ahead of another one. It's mathematics, causality, but that's very much the thing. And so it's really good to go back to your Big Bang. Now, your Big Bang of consciousness obviously would be conception and all that type of stuff. This is sort of like quantum mechanics of you getting together. I see very much the mechanics of sperm and egg and a whole lot of quantum mechanics coming together to open things up, doors to open, things to merge. That sort of pre-life quantum mechanics. I suppose we have got this is a very life definition, that a life definition is alive if eventually it can generate more life. Essentially, that might be it, or it has some awareness. For me, the life sort of springs from that complexity. And I think my first memory is I have memories of the obviously things are much bigger. I'm really thinking probably 2 or 3 years old. I do remember possibly crawling a bit. I do remember crawling across under the table and picking something out of shoe something up. I remember, I suppose this is reinforced by my father saying, "Oh, you crawled in when you're very young and picked up someone's bow in the shoe and then crawled across and gave it to her." And then I sort of do have this feeling of the old Holden car coming in the driveway and the sound of it driving in the driveway and the sort of light and sort of big people and the kitchen table, these very gentle views. and times and various views of the wall looking up from my cot and the ceiling and the a few different aspects of it and sort of the basic sort of playroom at 3 Talbot Grove. So that would have been 2-3 years old, sort of coming forward. And I do remember getting up late at night worrying about things and chatting with my father. I think I was 4 years old when I chatted with him, and he said, "Why can't you go to sleep?" And I said, "Oh, look, I'm worried about death." And he sort of said, "Oh, it's coming, but you know, you will have other things to worry about going forward." Now, I suppose there's sort of various incidences. One of the things, I suppose, the first time I got up at night and walked out and wandered around the streets at night, and it was just such a revelation that there was lights and streets and cars at night. It was just such a big revelation to come across. And there was another morning I got up pretty early at night, and before dawn, went out, and I still remember the door and all that type of stuff, so it must have been pretty small. And I was stuck outside at night, and so outside, and I just had to wait through the morning for Mum to get up. And I saw this, I was outside watching the clouds and the dawn occur and the beautiful pink clouds. That's sort of a very, I suppose for me, cosmic stuff. Now, of course, I was a horror child, because each morning I would get up and start hammering. There you go. Hammering and sawing and making inventions. I would make something every, have an invention every day when I got up, and put things together. And of course, my parents, poor parents, would hear all this noise. But that for me, that sort of time is the Big Bang for me, it's sort of cosmic in the universe. The actual Big Bang, that's a cosmic microwave background for me. Those earliest memories. And I know that it's going to stop eventually, and it hasn't stopped for me. But let's see what the time is here. 41. There you go. I'm crapping on for a long while. So there's the earliest memories, and then there's use of advanced physics, which, what can I say? People say we don't need it. Well, it's sort of, I don't know. People saying, look, I'm used to the village and the din of the village, and at daytime it's best to sit inside, huddled, and get to sleep. So people without physics and maths are people who sleep during the day, because during the day, if you get up during the day and you look out, you can see views, you can see very, very far. And it's almost like inhabit a nighttime world and talk about the day. I think that's the best way I can say. And you sort of grow into it. And I don't know. Like you look at some equations and you think deep. I suppose you think deeply about it. What essentially that means. And I don't know, you can do some cute calculations with it, but inevitably it does mean something about your existence. Like that, fundamentally, quantum mechanics really gets quantum mechanics. The wave function is your existence field. This is an existence field of a particle. You can't get more existency than that. Quantum mechanics is exact existence. And then general relativity is your progress through time, and the various tenses and how things go here. But through all that, through all the depth of thought, you have this rotational stuff, which is just enough to freak you out and try and work out why particles, what makes an electron, how it can re-knot. You put an electron and you put a huge amount of energy into it, and you can make a heavy electron. You can actually get the electron, shake the bejesus out of it, and just pump light into it. So a electron will change to a muon, I think, emitting radiation and stuff like that. I'll have to go on. So now, just a word of warning, there's a tau and a muon and a electron and the various neutrinos associated with it. It's something sort of really profound that that's the limit of the number of ways you can tie a knot. Sort of, I don't know, there's It's almost like a very, like, you think you can fold a piece of paper a billion ways. Well, you can only fold an electron so many different ways, and it's like once you've got used to not being able to comprehend a one number, physical number, like, say, a complex number you can't comprehend, it just takes a lot to think about. And so there you go. What can I say? I'm actually mixed up in my own equations. I've actually fallen into my own quantum physics book. I think possibly people do the same thing with Bibles. They read a Bible and that becomes part of their soul and structure. I haven't fallen into it. I've fallen through it in a certain way. So that's a talk about life existence from the point of view of a physicist. Hope you enjoyed it.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.